we wipe out 18, what you call them, you know.
You are.
Yeah. Yeah, it's easy to, I can get a transfer to the other. Okay, let's start from the beginning. Hi, where were you born?
I was born in Kiev, Russia. And came here when I was about a year or a year and a half of age.
To Wilmington?
To Wilmington. No, 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 to New York City, Manhattan.
Let's wait and see if we'll agree. Okay, this is 1-1-1-1-1-1-1. Okay, we start all again with State Charlie Young. You were born in Kiev.
I was born in Kiev, Russia.
K-I-E-V.
1904. I believe my parents came here with me about 1906. I was born in May.
Yeah, May of
1904. And I think they got here in 1906. And as was the custom, we had no place to go. We had relatives in Manhattan.
Wait, when you say you came to New York, what?
New York, and that's where I stayed. And I recall distinctly, I remember sleeping on the floor with a sheet or a blanket for about 6 months, and then we moved to Brooklyn. And that's where I remained in Brooklyn from that time on until 1917, 1918.
Let's go back. Why did they come here? What did your father, mother, what did your father do with Keith?
My father was a wine merchant, and that was a rather prestigious thing to be in Europe.
Wholesale or retail?
Retail.
Retail.
But he would have to buy his wine in what was then known as Petrograd. And a Jew only got into Petrograd almost with a passport.
Oh, yeah.
No Jew was permitted into Petrograd. And it was a sign of distinction among the neighbors that my parents were able to go.
He was able to travel.
Not to live there.
No.
He couldn't live there. But he could purchase and come back. And he used to bring candies and that sort of thing.
And he brought the wine back.
And then he brought the wine back.
Like horse and wagon?
And sold it.
Horse and wagon? Candy?
That I don't recall.
Were they religious?
Yes. Yes. They were Orthodox observant Jews.
And they lived in the ghetto in Kiev?
They lived in Kiev, and then they lived in a place called Chernigov Gubernia.
Gubernia?
Yes.
I've heard that name.
And I remember when I used to say to people that I've been raised in Chernigov Gubernia as a baby. I said, where in the world is that? But during the war, and during the stand of Stalingrad, I saw that Chernigov was not very far away.
The name Gubernia is a lot of launch people from there.
Yeah.
What
Gubernia is a province.
Yeah. Were you the first child, the only child?
No, I had one brother.
Born there?
Born there. He was about 8, 10 years. He was about 8 or 9 years older than I.
There just two then?
The two of us.
What prompted your father and mother to come here?
You're
way ahead of the pogroms now. Pogroms were in 1905, I think.
Yes, but the effect of the pogroms were still felt by my parents.
There had been pogroms before.
Oh, yes. You know that 1905 pogroms were just, it was almost like a Holocaust.
Yeah.
And although they were not affected, and they had certain kind of privileges because of the work that my father did and my grandfather, they were told that there's gold in America. All you had to do is go off the boat and you shovel the gold coins from the streets.
And your grandfather, how much do you know about him?
I know more about my maternal grandfather, whose name was Morsov, a very distinguished person who used to come from the United States once a year. He was a wine merchant.
How would you spell his name?
Morsoff.
M-O-R-S-O-F-F. Was that his last name?
Yes.
What was his first name?
Avram, Abraham.
Avram.
And I recall Ellis Island, because when he would leave, my mother and I would go to the dock to see him off and to see him come in.
Uh-huh.
And when that blast of the funnels, no matter how happy the departure was, no matter how happy the arrival was, there were tears and despair, the new country. And when you left on a boat in those days, you didn't know whether the boat was ever going to reach the other side.
Was he Orthodox?
Yes. Well, not, he was Orthodox, but he was ahead of his time.
Now, when your father would go buy wine, I mean, would he have to go to a kosher place and all that?
That I don't know. I don't know how that was handled in Europe. Of course, when he came here, he became a panspresser.
Yeah, but a wine merchant had some status there.
Oh, yes.
Because he would sell wine not only to Jews. What kind of wine? Okay.
That I don't know.
That made him a little bit, was more than just
the... Oh, sure. He wasn't the fiddler on the roof.
Yeah.
He wasn't the pantspresser. He wasn't the tailor. He wasn't the shoemaker. He wasn't the butcher.
Now, when they
he wasn't
left
the Bab Gula.
Bab, yeah. Now, when they left Kiev, how would they go? Would they go to Hamburg, like most of them? Or
that
not?
I don't know.
I don't know that.
I don't know.
Don't know what kind of ship was
it? You know, it was, you know, when you talk about roots, I often used to press my father of who was his grandfather. And I would be dismissed as though it was a ridiculous question. You know me, I'm here, my father is still living in Europe, and what are you asking all these questions about? I mean, he didn't say that, but that was the implication.
This was the paradox of Jews. They're supposed to be so historical-minded.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so then you come here where your brother was still living.
Oh, sure.
So you have two brothers, so...
One brother.
And so your father...
We entered school
in New York now, and...
In Brooklyn. And at school in Brooklyn. My brother, who was then in the eighth grade.
What was his name?
Max.
See, he's not...
No, he died a few years ago.
Yeah.
Well, he was on the track team. He was a handsome guy and very bright, caught on with English right away, great in mathematics. And I basked in his glory as a kid in the kindergarten and first grade.
So now you're in Brooklyn, you go to school at primary school.
Yeah.
So how did your parents make out with English?
My mother was quite sophisticated, and she did very well. My father still read the Forwards and the letters to the editor.
To your mother?
And my mother did too, but my mother would read an English paper, and my mother would...
Oh, really?
Oh, sure. My mother went to the English theater.
Where was she learning English? Remember?
Just picking it up by talking, and a desire to know. My father never had that. Well, he butchered it. He spoke, but it was really fractured.
How about Russian? Do they speak Russian?
Oh, fluently. And my brother spoke fluently until he was way up in years.
So there was English, Russian, and Yiddish.
Yes.
So there you are. You go to school. You don't remember what school, anything like that. Remember what school in Brooklyn?
That I went to?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I remember. I went
PS
to PS 33. and that school was up to the sixth grade.
They always had PS. They always had
PS 33, and I had men teachers in the sixth grade.
Oh,
you know,
really?
That was something. I'll never forget their names. Dr. Rockwood, and I forgot the other man's name. One was Jewish, and one was not Jewish. You talk about school in those days. We stood in awe of our teachers. And then from the sixth grade, which was PS 33, you then went to PS 122. And...
You always had PS.
PS 122.
They had no names.
No. PS 122.
Well, maybe when you were a kid, same thing with me. I was living on Front Street. There were several people you couldn't turn down. You had respect. The teacher, the cop, and the farmer's bank. We were never allowed to mark up the farmer's bank.
Never. Well, I agree with you on the teachers,
and the cop.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, there was a boy in my class by the name of Friedman. His father was a cop, and he used to get all the new books, the Rover books, the algebra books, and keep. You know, you weren't permitted to bring a book of that kind into school. You weren't permitted to eat candy in class, or you'd be expelled. You'd be sent home. Well, he used to have all the new books, and we used to take him and read with him, and his father was shook. killed. And God, it had a terrific impact on all the friends.
You couldn't read the Horatio algebra?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, when you went to Cheder,
and Tom Swift, those were my greatest books.
Well, you went to Cheder, though.
Oh, I went to Cheder.
Did you take pickles to Cheder?
No.
We went to
Cheder. It always smelled of tobacco and tobacco juice. And there I was taught, of course, my bar mitzvah speech.
We'll come to that, man.
Okay.
Now, in your class were many Jews. Was it mixed?
Oh. In the classroom, yeah, a great many Jews, Italians, two colored boys. I'm sorry, you have the picture home, my graduation picture.
Yes.
Yeah. Jews, Catholics, Protestants.
You both talk about the teachers and the cops. What about the rabbis? Were they respected?
They were feared.
They were in a different category.
I tell you who else were feared. Your music teacher. When I was taught, I was playing the violin.
You used to play violin?
He had no hesitation. He had no hesitation taking his bow and hit me over the knuckles. And one thing about it, the mother and the father never took sides with the child. The teacher was right. The rabbi was right. Everybody was right and you were wrong.
And that interesting violin would come back.
Oh, that's
you thought you'd be another Michel?
Oh, I was going to be the greatest.
I don't know. That's an amazing thing. Well, then it was a pretty well mixed group, though.
Oh, yes.
And you went from where? Then you went up. You
then I entered. I entered Boys High. Boys
Brooklyn?
High in Brooklyn. Boys High in Brooklyn was the equivalent of Central High in Philadelphia. You got a degree when you were graduated.
Right, yeah.
That was one of the greatest high schools in the United States. And I entered that school, and it was very prestigious to get into Boys High because near my neighborhood was Eastern District High School, where boys and girls went, and anybody that was wanting to be a scholar, a lawyer, a doctor wouldn't go to Eastern District High School because they taught not only academic courses, but they taught commercial.
Oh, that was a terrible thing.
That was beneath us. Yeah. You might as well go to
commercial.
Oh, that was an awful course. But Boys High, that was the Latin school.
Tony, if you want to butt in any time. Now, when you went to high school now, did you study Latin?
Of course.
But and algebra and all those.
And algebra, geometry.
Well, now, you couldn't go home. Could you go home and do your lessons with your mother or father? You know, this is what they're telling us about the parents working with the kids.
My father and my mother could care less when I came home. This was my routine. I would come home and I would always envy my classmate, who was a class below me rather, was my classmate, Jake Topkis. He would carry a briefcase. You know, carrying a briefcase in high school with this the emblem of Topkis.
He had liquor in it.
And instead of going to the grocery store, as I had to go, first on third and fourth and Walnut, and then third and Lombard, and then over Third Street Bridge, he would go to the movie, you know, go in free. And once in a while, I played hooky from the store and went to a movie with him, got hell when I came in about 5 o'clock or 5:30, but I had to come home from school 3:30 and work. And then you remember the stores around 4th and Walnut, you have your store, and you have the dining room adjoining the store, so the table's near the door, and you look to see if a customer's coming in, and while you're doing your geometry, you're doing your Latin, you drop, you go in, and you wait on the customer.
It may have been with others, but the Jewish boy, he couldn't relate to it. They did nothing about any algebra problems or Latin problems.
None, whatever.
Or
the
English
only,
composition.
When you got your grades and you came back, and you say, Mom, I got all A's. So, if you didn't get all A's, you'd be selling newspapers. Sure, you got all A's. They expect you to get all A's.
But you got a C.
Oh. Yeah, that was different. But you had to get A's or B's.
Okay, then you finished the boys' high school in Brooklyn.
No, I did not.
Oh, you're
I
not
entered there. Boys' high.
Oh, entered, yeah.
And at that year, we moved to Wilmington.
What brought them to Wilmington?
Wilmington, we had...
What year would that be now?
The beginning of 1918. Summer of 1918. And I want to tell you...
Where?
Where'd you move?
I want to tell you. When I arrived at our beautiful station, after living in a very lovely section of Williamsburg, which was a tree-lined brownstone section, and I arrived at that station.
Front and French.
Front and French, and we stayed above, I forgot his name, Sklutz Chicken Store on Shipley Street. You know, with all the lice and all the stink on the second floor, and I left my friends.
On the east side of Chipley.
Yeah, yeah, on the east side. On the west side.
West side.
West side of Shipley. It was right next to the corner, was Sklutz Chicken Store. We lived upstairs, Greenberg's.
Oh, my brother-in-law lived there, too. Go ahead. I saw it the other day. There's no step anymore.
No,
that way.
I know what, no.
All right, go ahead. So you move into that. Yeah. All right.
And we, of course, we lived there until my parents bought a grocery store.
Where?
And the grocery store, the first grocery store we bought was on 30th. There was the, I say grocery. We sold dry goods, ice cream, cut the cold meats, and tobacco, you name it. It was still during the war. We had the armistice was in November 1918. And you know, we had the Pusey and Jones shipyards there, Harlan and Hollingsworth, you know, you name them all around there, and they all used to come in. My father would open the store at 5:30 and close at 12. If a customer, he had one customer that would come for a quart of milk, between 11 and 12 he wouldn't close the store, so he could sell that quart of milk.
How would he get the money to move? What brought him to Wilmington?
Well, we had brought over, my mother and father brought over cousins and nieces and nephews. And some of the nieces lived with us, for Belkin was one. She died recently. I think you remember Belkin. And Greenberg was another one. And then there was, some of the males. And one of them, we almost adopted in our family. He became like a son. And he went down and got a job here in Wilmington, in the shipyard. If you got in the shipyard, the thought was you weren't going to get into the Army.
That's right, yeah.
Well, he got in the shipyard and also got into the Army and went overseas. But at any rate, we were told this is the place to come because Wilmington is where you really can make. So we came down, my father had accumulated a few thousand dollars, and we bought a grocery store.
He had not been in the grocery business before.
Never, never in his life. Never been in any kind of a retail business.
Except the wine.
He
was accustomed to.
Yeah,
to.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious of what it was about Wilmington. You never heard of Wilmington?
Never heard of it in our lives. I didn't know what it was like. It was a foreign country. As a matter of fact, when I would come up, maybe I'd make two trips a year back to Brooklyn to meet my friends. They'd ask me, do we have trolley cars? Does it snow in Wilmington? I mean, that's how provincial, of course, New Yorkers are. And I was the same way myself. No, I
now they moved all their clothing and
everything. We lock, stock, and barrel.
Came here by train.
Yes.
Now, you were a third in lumber.
Yes.
Wasn't the Borish family, you remember the Borish family?
Of course, Leah was my girlfriend for a while.
She was a belle of the...
Leah was my gal. And with Leah, I want to tell you about Leah.
See?
Leah, of course, Leah was a very bright girl. You remember
that.
Remember.
And she was older than me, but I remember everybody.
And the brother was extreme. Well,
yeah.
He went to Harvard, you know.
Yeah.
He went to Harvard, and I don't know what he's going to be, a doctor or something. But she was a very bright girl, and she could cut up a hindquarter of meat like any butcher could. And while the parents were upstairs, say some things I'm not going to say in here.
Go ahead, go ahead.
But while she was upstairs, we were, again, and that's the kind of grocery where she was on Poplar and Second or something like that. We would be necking in the dining room, and a customer would come in, she'd go over there and chop meat. And then we'd come back, and in between we did our geometry and Latin and translation and that sort of thing.
She was the belle of the...
I want to tell you something. Even at the risk of being immodest, I always got the bells.
Let's not be immodest. Well, your contemporaries were...
Meyer Borish was his name.
Meyer Borish was that. Then there was this fellow, a smart boy named Glick, at second.
That's later.
Okay, so then you went to the Wilmington High School.
When I came to Wilmington High, what a revolting development that was.
Let's emphasize you had to walk.
Oh, no.
No bus.
I used to go from over Third Street Bridge and walk to school.
You
know,
go to Third Street Bridge?
Well, we got a store later.
Oh, I see, yeah.
When I got
you went to Wilmington High School.
Yeah. Well, I went to Wilmington High School.
Berlin was principal.
And when I, Poppy Berlin. And when I stood in line, I have to register, they said, what are you taking, academic or commercial or Latin scientific? I said, what the hell is that? I don't know. I didn't know the different things. He said, well, what do you want to study? I said, well, I'm not sure whether I want to be a doctor or a lawyer. So I started in, I registered as Latin scientific. I couldn't stand physics and I couldn't stand inorganic chemistry, so I quit and then went to the academic.
Now you went all through high school.
I went through high school.
Take Latin?
I took Latin.
Got the ticket?
French. Oh, yeah.
You're still living in
it. Mrs. Coleman. Do you remember Ms. Buckley?
Yeah.
I'll never forget Ms. Buckley. One of my classmates, Slonsky, got up and he was reciting, translating Caesar so beautifully. She came over to him and she says, let me see that pony.
Yeah.
And she grabbed it from
was
him.
Was that Bigot?
No,
Buckley.
She slapped him, and Slonsky slapped her so damn hard that she reeled back.
Well, that was awful.
Well, he was expelled. He was expelled for I don't know how many weeks. But the class froze.
Sure.
The class froze. He slapped her right back. Oh, he was a tough guy.
And you went all through Virgil and all that.
Oh, God, yes.
You never used the pony.
And Miss Fitzpatrick for French?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Madame
Do you remember Dr. Fitzpatrick? Do you remember Dr. Mestre?
I know of him.
Well, Dr. Mestre tried to teach us French. They finally threw him the hell out of school because he taught us French with a Spanish accent. It wasn't through the nasal phonetic sound, you know. It was always, he would say like, vous est, ils est. See what I mean? Instead of il est, vous est.
But Mademoiselle Fitzpatrick was the teacher.
She was a great
teacher. She organized
the
French
club. The minute you came in class, yeah. She spoke French. It was all conversational French.
Yeah,
you remember, remember Quigley?
Yeah.
Quigley was one of the stars in French.
And you had Schneider for chemistry. You had the chemistry.
Sure. I used
you
to
had chemistry?
So sorry for him. Yeah, I took chemistry.
And the principal was Berlin.
Yes. And you remember the history teacher, Barclay?
Oh, yeah.
Something else?
Professor Barclay. E.W. Barclay. He later went to the University of Delaware. And his daughter was around. He had a daughter.
Do you remember a professor by the name of Dunn?
No.
He finally went to Wesleyan after. He was the one that taught us to write themes, you know. What I'm saying now, Tony, to you is acceptable. But, you know, in 1918, a theme, what do you mean by a theme? You write a composition, or you write something.
Yeah.
But a theme, well, anyhow, he had college ideas for us. It was great.
Did most of the students go to college, or what percentage did?
I don't recall.
Well, the ones that studied York, they usually went to college.
Yeah, my group went to college.
And you still look down on the commercial people.
Oh, they were nothing to us.
They were just riffraff.
Absolutely. We had no...
Okay, then when you had the assemblies, old Berlin used to read letters, didn't he, from...
I remember it, and we used to have, I'll never forget the thrill of the juniors with their chrysanthemums and the juniors with their whites and the seniors with their yellow, and the freshmen were in a gallery. They weren't permitted in the main. And then we had the orchestra. You remember Hillerson? And I was just thrilled. Someday I'm going to be on that first floor, and someday I'm going to be something in this school. And then of course I got into the dramatic club, and I was.
Were there many?
I
want to get there. Were there many Jews in your group?
Yeah, quite a number.
You
no, but not too many.
You didn't feel any anti-Semitism?
Well,
real or suspected?
Suspected. Scratching the boy. Yes, I would say there was anti-Semitism because I know that if the Jewish boys took out some girls for a date, and we didn't go out much. It was always home parties, and we would go to Haywood's on Washington Street. That's where the WASP boys hung out. They're not so WASP boys, and they would look at the Jewish guys as...
Now, living where you live was not too far from St. Mary's. Did you have any problems with the Catholics, Irish Catholics there, like I did?
No, but we had a lot of Catholics around our store.
Yeah.
And the Dugans, particular, and I remember our discussions all the time was the divinity of Christ. And we would get into heated discussions on those things. But a Jew was a Jew. He was in a different class.
You remember being called Christ killer at all?
No.
You never called that? Okay, now about your violin, how'd you start that? Who started that business?
Can I tell you one thing about our store on Fourth and Walnut?
Fourth and Walnut.
Remember, it's empty now. It's been torn down.
Yeah, there was Bessinger had a store.
Bessinger was across the street that sold all the masks and the candies and all.
And we were right across the street
and had the grocery.
An Army Navy store there.
No, the Army Navy was again Chaikin. He was on the other corner. We were on the southwest corner. Bessinger was on the southeast.
Right next to the school.
That's a little school.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when I used to go in the bathroom, I could see into the classroom with the teacher and the kids in the school right next door.
I went to number six school.
Yeah, that was a school. Yeah. But let me tell you, I was making my way in high school then by being elected to the French club, being elected to the dramatic club, being given the lead in the Christmas play. The Christmas Fiat Lux, that was the great play of all times. Let There Be Light. So I was making my grade, but I'd have to come back from school and work in the store. Now, people used to buy kerosene for their lamps. And I'd have to pump the kerosene outside. See, it was out on the it was in front of the store. I also had to deliver orders to on 7th and 8th and Rodney near the reservoir.
Way out there.
With a push cart. And when I would see some of my classmates, and they would see me pumping the gasoline, pushing the push cart up 3rd Street, Tony doesn't know, the hills that I'd have to go, pushing a push cart. It was, to me, the most degrading, most humiliating thing that I ever experienced in my life. And that was...
Let's get to the fiddle now. Who started
the fiddle?
This started now in Brooklyn.
I still have the fiddle, yes.
This started in Brooklyn?
I started in Brooklyn.
How did that start?
Well, every mother wanted her son either to play the piano, but primarily the fiddle, because we used to get fiddled in the yard of our tenement house every,
it happened to me too, and I just wondering, what the hell get my mother, Miss Gillespie taught me, same woman taught Hillerson.
Yeah.
But what the hell got her to teach?
They wanted someone to play music. Music was something lovely, and they always heard the fiddle. They always heard somebody playing a fiddle in the courtyard. I say courtyard, in the yard of the tenement.
So then you got the fiddle.
So I got the fiddle.
Do you remember who the teacher was? Anything about the teacher? Was it a man or a woman?
First, I had a man who did not know a thing. He was an old codger, and what he'd like to do is come over, get a glass of tea with lump sugar and very little instruction.
A Jewish?
Jew, of course. Then I got a young man, and I'll never forget the thrill that I had when he invited us to a recital, a concert, at which he was in the orchestra. In one of the most elegant homes on Bedford Avenue. Bedford Avenue, in my day, was the Fifth Avenue of New York. It's not what Bedford Stuyvesant today. And I was thrilled with it, but I never did advance. Although I think I played pretty well. I played up to some years ago.
Did you have to play Jewish songs to your mother?
Of course, the Spintily Yid was my favorite. By ear. All that, sure. I was, in fact, my father used to take me to visit his friends, and they'd tell me to carry the fiddle along. And I would take the fiddle, and some of it, I would improvise as I
improvise.
I would improvise as I played. So my father would say, "Ah, Shane, play it again." I couldn't play it again.
Now the fiddle, that's very interesting. Now the fiddle experience stopped when you came here, or was it continuing?
Oh no, I stopped a long time in Brooklyn, but I kept playing.
Yeah,
I kept playing, and I still have the violin. And
half size, was a small one.
Well, here when we used to have our New Year's Eve parties, or when Sol Cohen at home, he'd have a gang together. Sol played the fiddle too, so someone would play the piano, and he and I would exchange playing the violin. And Coley Cohen used to play the piano.
Well, now, you belong to these clubs, the dramatic club.
Yeah.
I think you were the Wisp. I say, think
the Wisp was the newspaper.
Did you write for the Wisp?
Oh, sure. I wrote one of the most harrowing stories ever printed in the Wisp.
Did you write?
It was a murder story in Russia.
How about poetry? Did you write poetry?
No, I not only didn't I write poetry, I don't understand poetry except simple poetry.
Okay, so then you got into the various activities. Did you have time for all this?
Yes.
Let's say now you were, now how about your cheder experience?
Well, that
was... You had cheder in Brooklyn.
Well, yeah, but I was through with that here.
You came here?
Yeah.
Oh, you already bar mitzvah?
Yes.
Where? Sure. Tell me about your bar mitzvah. Bar mitzvah in Brooklyn?
I was bar mitzvah in Brooklyn, and it was one of those two-day bar mitzvahs. Saturday, you know, you went to shul.
Yeah.
And then after you call to the Torah,
yeah,
you then get to the, you call to the beam over there,
yeah,
and you make this speech in Hebrew. And then you raise your hands.
Did you
and
say, my friend,
my
teacher, my
tired mutter? But you raise your hands and they cry.
Did you start by saying that today I am a man?
Oh, I don't recall that, but it was something along those lines.
Big thing.
And then a big shindig afterwards. And the presents consisted mostly of ink stand sets,
fountain pen.
The Waterman fountain pen, and gold coins, $2.50. $5 gold coin.
What was the thing about fountain pen? They still give ballpoint pens to give. It's an old tradition.
Yeah,
what?
I guess so.
Yeah?
Is it? The fountain pen, yeah.
Okay, who trained you for the Haftorah?
Never forget him as long as I live. Rabbi Fine. Big fat guy. He used to love.
Was he tough?
No, he was easier. They ran all over him.
This was an Orthodox shul.
Yeah.
Well, what was the two-day part of it?
Well, Saturday was where you bar mitzvah, Saturday.
Yes.
Sunday was a big dinner. And on Sunday, I gave my English speech, which took about a half hour or so.
But was it because they wouldn't allow a party on the Sabbath? Or?
Well,
I don't know.
You couldn't prepare a dinner.
I don't know.
You
yeah, that
so
may
today
be.
Today they do?
No, it was all prepared. Oh, today they do.
Today's
but usually a bar mitzvah was a two-day deal.
See, when I was bar mitzvah, all they did was... We went upstairs, and then downstairs there was always cake. You know, the cake, the yellow cake, you know, and the wine. And that was but they weren't as lavish as they are now.
Oh,
are they?
Oh God, and now it's...
Your mother was up in the back gallery.
Oh, sure.
Crying and weeping.
Probably, sure, and her son.
But why didn't you continue? But when you came here, your religious connection stopped or what? Did you continue? At all?
Yeah, we went.
Where'd your father go? Addis Kodesh?
Yeah, Addis Kodesh. No, Chesed Tzelemet.
Oh.
On Shipley Street.
What brought him over there? He must be caught up in the schism, I suppose.
Yes, you know, in that group of people there, you know, the higher echelon of Jews belonged to Addis Kodesh then, the Topkis and the Feinbergs and that group. But the middle class Jew, the grocery guys and all, most of them belong to Chesed Tzelemet.
Yeah, and that's where you went.
Yeah.
But you had no, but then on there was no, you didn't go to cheder anymore. You were bar mitzvah
through.
Oh, no. And after you were bar mitzvah, did you go to, in the morning service at all? Put on tefillin?
Oh, I put on tefillin for about 2 years.
Every morning?
Yes. Yes, I did that.
Did you have to come home and show your mother the marks?
No, I didn't. It's like, I'll always remember when we talked about attending Friday night services when I was very friendly with Aaron Finger. He says, you know, it's all habit forming. Once you start going and going and going, it's a habit that you love doing. So I got into that habit and then I abandoned it.
Okay, so now in high school, now you became active in the French club and particularly in the dramatic club.
Yes.
That was a great outlet.
Mm.
You remember, because the Wisp would give us all those details of what plays were in and stuff like
that. Oh, yes. In fact, I have some of the copies at home.
Okay. Mm. And then you graduated when?
1922.
A year before me.
Yeah.
You didn't go into athletics?
No.
After school, did you have time after school? Did you have to work?
Sure, I worked in the store every afternoon.
Store?
In a store. I worked on Saturdays. I worked on Saturdays.
Okay, so you worked in the store on Saturdays?
I worked in the store, and I worked every day, every afternoon.
Did this conflict with your extracurricular activities in the school?
No, no, I had time for plays. Yeah.
Okay, then you were graduated, and that was in the high school, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was the ceremony.
Right.
Cap and gown.
Oh, sure.
Now, when did you, tell me about this Christmas play. Now, this was, did your mother and father complain about being in a Christmas play?
No, but they thought, well, they thought I'm going to, they thought I would take up my career as an actor. In the Christmas play, Minnie Feynman was in it, and I'm trying to think of the name of this terrific, handsome guy. I think his name was Andy, but he was in the play, and it was an it was a man who had lost his son in the war, and his daughter. His daughter was crippled. And it opens up with the bells ringing. And I remember during the rehearsals, the kids from grammar school would come in, and I know they were just thrilled. And I gave them the rolling R's. There is no God. the bells, the ringing of the bells.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You may have seen the play.
Yeah.
And I came in and I just could, the bells were deafening. And then suddenly I fall asleep and I dream. And my son comes in and Minnie comes in and all that sort of thing. And there's a crutch. I've always kept his crutch that he had against the fireplace. And then when the dream is over, then I say, the crutch is gone. There is a God. And the curtain comes down. Fiat lux.
Let me tell you, I tried out for the senior play in high school, and I was turned down. But then I was working on the morning news as an office boy. I persuaded them, I should review this show. And the living hell out of it. And the living hell out of it.
Especially the lead.
That's the kind of a bastard I was. Well, you graduated from high school then in 1922.
Two.
And when did you decide on law? Oh, then you went to University of Delaware.
Yeah.
Now that was a big jump, wasn't it? It was a big...
Sure. And then it was a question. Where do I want to go? My first choice was Michigan.
Yeah, hold that. Now, there was no question in your parents' mind that you had to finish high school.
No question.
No question at all.
No question.
And when you went to one, what they call grammar school, there's no question that you had to go to high school.
Right.
But now when you went to college, there's something else now. It involves money now.
That's right. Yeah. And that was the deciding factor.
And your brother was still living.
Yes, but he was living in New York.
At that time?
Yes.
Oh, I see. So you're the only kid.
Yeah, I was the only one home.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go. Michigan was my first choice.
Why Michigan?
Well, I'll tell you why. I was very much impressed. In those days, I was an avid reader, particularly of the magazines in the library there. In Delaware, do you remember that little house they had on the corner, which was the library then, before they built the big library? But at any rate.
One at Asian Market?
No, I'm talking about the Delaware.
Oh, the Delaware Library, yeah.
And I used to read, then it was one magazine, by the way, which inspired me a great deal, and that was the American Hebrew. You remember that magazine?
Yeah, I remember the story.
And I tell you who, Marie Samuels used to be a great contributor to that magazine. And then there was one put out by Michigan. The campus, I forgot the name of the guy who's been the benefactor of all of Michigan Law School. It's a very, very famous name. But I was very much impressed with Michigan. And then it was Harvard. It was Michigan, Harvard, Penn.
But you hadn't finished your academic, your BA.
No, but you're talking about law school, what made me decide on law, and I thought I'd want to go to one of those schools.
When did you decide on law? Somewhere in high school?
No. Well, I thought I might be a teacher. Then I thought I might go in for acting. And then finally, I decided I'll be a lawyer.
Right.
And my closest friend was Paul Leahy, and he decided he's going to be a journalist. He wanted to write. And when we got to Delaware, he decided he's going to be a lawyer. So we decided we're going to be lawyers, or we're going to study law.
Was Charlie Rosenberg in your class?
Charlie Rosenberg was not in my class. He was
contemporary,
but yeah.
He played a fiddle real well, I think.
Yes.
Okay, so now about jumping out to, now you have to, now you're going to the University of Delaware.
As a matter of fact, Charlie Rosenberg is responsible for my marrying Ann.
Oh, really?
Because when we were going to Plattsburgh, he said, let's stop and see the blanks. And I said, okay. So I stopped and saw the blanks, and there was Ann. Yeah. And we had a great time. They had a wonderful family. We were all entertained. And then when we were through with our stint in Plattsburgh, I'm ready to go back to Wilmington. He says, let's stop and see the blanks. I says, what the hell for? We were there on our way up. Well, there it was.
You know any of this? Okay, now going to, I'm trying to get the picture of this little Jewish boy on the east side suddenly going to the University of Delaware. That's a big jump. That means money.
It wasn't so much there.
You're not, well, you're not, but
because
you're not,
I would commute.
Well, you commute.
I commute. I used to walk. We then had our grocery store at Third Street Bridge.
Oh, then you moved.
At Third Street Bridge. So I would walk through the freight yards, you know, near Pusey and Jones and all that, to take the train, the Pennsylvania train, but mostly the B&O, the 650.
Yeah.
You know what a walk that is from 3rd Street Bridge to the B&O early in the morning to catch that 650?
We're at 3rd Street Bridge, were you?
Being healed.
Being healed, the grocery store.
Yes, Victor Kale's store. You remember Kale, the piano player, the fairy?
Oscar Kale,
but his father was Victor Kale.
Victor Oscar Kale, his wife's still living, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah, she's out at the Riverside. Dorothy Kale.
Is that so? Isn't that funny?
I always thought he was a homo.
A pleasure.
I thought he was a homo.
Well, he was.
He married her.
I know. Well, he was
great
transsexual.
Color, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so then you moved down there, and then you went to the University of Delaware. You enrolled, took in the academic, what they call the academic courses. You knew these great giants.
My first year was absolutely, I thought I was going to bust.
Why?
Well, they threw me into trigonometry. And the only thing I had was geometry. I had algebra and geometry. The boys that had taken the courses, the scientific courses, had trigonometry. So to them it was a repeat. They also had organic and inorganic chemistry, and they threw me into the chemistry class. Well, you know, well, when they talked about parabolas and all that sort of thing, I didn't know what the hell they were talking about.
See, they already had trigonometry.
They had it. Yeah. They had it way ahead of me, and I had to start. As a matter of fact, Blyberg was in my class. Remember Izzy Blyberg? Well, he died, too. He took a commercial course for the first 2 years. So we had one hell of a time, but I did make the grade because I did do well in all
but
the
you
other.
You commuted, though.
I commuted.
You had no idea of living down there.
No, I couldn't afford to do that. I had to work in stores.
Then you met such giants like Seifert, I suppose.
Oh, he was my great friend.
Who was some of the others? You know?
Ryden, who taught history. Ryden gave me a send-off of a letter of recommendation for law school. That was you'd think I was the summa cum laude in the school. He was so good to me.
So now you're the first generation of your family that went to college.
Yeah.
And then while in university, it was already the university then, wasn't it? It changed.
Yes, it was university then. But we had a great, enrollment then was 550 males.
But there was no
just
time.
Males.
600. Yeah,
yeah,
the women were separated.
Separated. From the men. You see, women's college started in 1914, separate. But you had no time for extracurricular things.
No, only for plays. Only for dramatics, and there I joined the what's known as the Footlights Club.
Oh yeah,
and I was the first Jew to get into the Footlights Club, and also as a result of that, I was the one that was never hazed.
Okay.
Oh, they had some terrible
was there anti-Semitism
hazing.
There or just
terrible,
anti-Semitism?
Terrible.
Really,
the roll call was the most horrendous experience every in different classrooms when they would call Slansky and they say Slansky, Schmansky, the boys would yell out.
That was
Yanowitz.
What's Slansky? Where was his, he died? What was his first name?
It'll come to
okay.
Me. Oh,
oh
it
was
terrible.
Now,
until
now,
and Slein was in the class, and I must tell you about that. Slein. One day, this happened almost every day. One day, Slein gets a hold of Murphy, who later became the head of the telephone company here, and he got him by the collar, lifted him up in front of the professor, and he whacked him and threw him down on it. They never heard Schlein again in that classroom. That was terrible.
But most of them were downstate. Was that the thing, or what?
Yeah, it was the anti. Well, we worked like hell to try to get a fraternity over there, because Jews were not admitted, except that, you know, I was one of my classmates. Well, Jacobson, you know, was a great basketball player, and the fellow from downstate, the name of the magistrate,
Abelman
was a football player. So that gave us
Ben Abelman?
No, Abelman, he's from Missouri.
Oh.
He's an engineer in Missouri. But he came from Georgetown.
Was he related to the
brother?
Meyer Abelman, the Ben Abelman.
Yeah. So.
And it was tough on Jews then, there.
Very tough on Jews.
All the way through, or just?
Well, I would say it tapered off a bit, but. It was something for a Jew to be invited to one of the fraternities, even to be with a guy just to sit around with him. For example, if I went to Sigma Nu with Paul Lay, it's only because of Paul Lay that I was welcome, but no Jews were permitted.
He probably told you you're the only Jew ever come in here.
That's right.
Well, were you there when they organized a Jewish fraternity? Well,
sure, I helped organize it.
That was what now?
That would have been about a year or so later.
Sigma Alpha Rho?
It was Sigma Tau Phi.
Sigma Tau Phi.
Sigma Tau Phi. We got our furniture from Nathan Miller, and we paid for it eventually.
Of course, you had to be a Greek, couldn't be a Hebrew.